Okay, we're back at it.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
So we won Oklahoma and it was state. And it was state.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, I watched a lot of the NBA draft last night. I get the sense you did not.
I did not watch the NBA draft last night. The NBA draft, you know, and even the NFL draft to an extent. I like to watch the early part of the first round. I like to watch my Cowboys pick and see how they're gonna screw things up. But as far as the NBA draft goes, I mean, my team's not in the top 3 to 5. Like the Chet year, I was locked in. The Giddy year, even at 6, I was locked in. So there's some years where the Thunder have had higher picks, and I've taken a little bit more interest. Whenever there were good drafts, there were players I had heard of, names that I knew. Last night was the total opposite of that. I don't know who any of these guys are. The Thunder did not have a really high pick. They're not going to draft a guy who's going to contribute to winning a championship in the next year or two, I wouldn't imagine. So, yeah, my focus for NBA fandom will be in free agency, because the draft last night, I think, is going to end up having very little impact on anything that happens with Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. It's just kind of interesting to see, you know, Sam Presti's a interesting dude. I mean, he has his types. One, you got to have a great wingspan, or two, he's going to take the youngest guy in the draft. And he did both of those things. He took the Nikola Topic, spelled like topic, who was the youngest player. I think he's 18 years old. He'll be one of the youngest players in next year's draft, should he have gone out next year. And then he takes this Dylan Jones guy, who I really like. If you watch some of his breakdowns, he's just going to create havoc in the corners for the Thunder. He has a 6'11" wingspan, and he's 6'4.5". I looked it up. Jalen Williams had a 7'2" wingspan. Westbrook had a 6'8", being 6'3". Reggie Jackson, being only about 6'3", had a 6'11" wingspan. So clearly Presti's got a type. And no matter what, Colby, you know, there was clamor from Thunder fans on Thunder Twitter to take the Dalton Connect kid from Tennessee, who was falling because he's kind of a ready now player. He's older. He's like 23.5, I think. No matter what, if there's clamor for a certain guy, or draft experts think the Thunder should take a certain guy, like, Presti's never going to do that. It's always going to be a curveball. Every time somebody falls to them and everyone's like, oh, the Thunder are going to get this guy, it never happens.
No, it never happens. And Sam Presti has been a great drafter historically. I don't pretend that I know more than Sam Presti. You know, with the NFL, sometimes I feel like I can give informed opinions about those picks because these are guys I've watched, and that's something that I study a little bit more, is something I'm more interested in. I would have a hard time sitting here criticizing Sam Presti as if I was grinding film over Dalton Necht and then and Topic and the guy Dalton Jones that they gave up 5 seconds for, and everybody's like, 5 seconds? Like, do you know how valuable 5 seconds are in the NBA? Not very. Second round picks don't mean much in the NBA. Every so often, you'll have somebody come out of the second round. You know, Nikola Jokic was a second rounder, but those are crazy rare. Yeah, the Dalton Jones kid, I think, can have an impact. And who knows what Topic turns into whenever he's no longer a child and is a grown man here in a few years. So, yeah, I'm bullish about the Thunder, not because of what happened with the draft last night, but I don't think we've been on since the trade last week when Josh Giddey was sent to Chicago in exchange for Alex Caruso. A 10 out of 10 from me, Carson. 11 out of 10 from me. I think that was a fantastic trade. In Presti, we trust.
Yeah, I mean, just Presti's heist rate has to be the highest of any GM. Like, he makes trades that, like, people who really follow this stuff, that are really locked into not only just the NBA, but salary cap, assets, things of that nature, they're always just like dumbfounded how Presti gets these teams to agree to this stuff. Again, like, I kind of lost track of Caruso. Remember, he began his career with the Thunder. I know he played well for the Lakers when they won the title in the bubble, but I clearly wasn't watching many Bulls games. But apparently, Colby, he's developed into one of the best role players in the NBA. Shot 41% from threes. He's made all NBA defense the last 2-3 years. He's one of the best on-ball defenders in the league, can guard every position. You basically swapped a guy, Giddey, that you weren't going to pay, that was not willing to come off the bench, that really didn't fit the Thunder because Shea or Jalen are going to have the ball in their hands every time. You're able to swap that depreciating asset that you're going to have to pay for a guy that you want to pay to play crunch time playoff minutes for you. And you didn't have to give up a single pick to do so when teams were offering multiple first rounds for this guy. Presti just defies trade logic. His trades, Colby, would get denied on Xbox if you're playing like NBA 2K. The trades he's able to pull off would get denied. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was interesting that there was no pick attached. And I think that part of that has to do with Giddey's age, his size. And if he's on a team where he can be the primary ball handler and be more of a playmaker for his teammates, as opposed to, you know, what he was doing with the Thunder, which was playing off ball, you know, just shifting down the baseline, throwing up that 8-foot floater and then shooting 27% from three. You know, if he can go do something where his skill set is more necessary, then maybe he can be really valuable for an NBA team. But getting Alex Caruso was just a smash for Oklahoma City. And it opens up some possibilities to land the guy that I've been talking about for months that I want Oklahoma City to go out and get this offseason. I've told you who I want Oklahoma City to go get, right?
Markkanen?
No. Nope.
Who?
Rhymes with Schmevin Schmarant.
Kevin Durant?
That is who I want Oklahoma City to go get. I want Oklahoma City to go get Kevin Durant. I want them to win a title. I want everyone to heal. It'll be the best feel-good story in sports.
That would be cool, and it would mend a lot of fences. There's a part of me, you know, Colby, I can be a little spiteful in life. It's one of my personality flaws. I can hold a grudge with the best of them. The spiteful person in me wants to go win a title without Kevin while he rots away. And he is literally an NBA purgatory. He doesn't have a home. He won't have a team to call his own when he goes into the Hall of Fame. The only titles he's won were Steph Curry was the best player on those teams. I kind of would prefer Kevin to go rot in NBA purgatory. And I don't know how you pay the guy and keep all your young players too. That's another issue.
It could be tricky, but I would trust Presti to work that out. I understand that Kevin's choices that he made, the way he went about certain things, would lead a lot of Thunder fans probably closer to where you're at. Like, just let him go exist and score 26 a game wherever he's at and not bother anybody. But I don't know, just something about the idea that he could come back, that Oklahoma City could be his home, that he could right that wrong. Because the way he left was wrong. Like, you leave. But the way he left, absolutely. Yeah. The opportunity for him to right that wrong. And I mean, there's no apology quite like a championship parade. And I absolutely think that if they were to give up, I don't even know. This is just pure speculation, just a random name I'm tossing out there, like Dort and four firsts or whatever it might take to go get him. Yeah, I think Oklahoma City would be a serious top three or four contender for a championship at that point. So I'm all in on the KD bandwagon, but I can understand why a lot of Thunder fans would not be there with me.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, if Kevin walks into the arena wearing his old number 35, I'd probably be all in at that point. It's just, as we sit here on, you know, June 27th, I'm a little hesitant, but don't get me wrong. They start playing the I'm coming home. And he comes out in his 35 jersey. You could sign me up for that. I mean, I was fortunate enough to cover the team on those runs. You know, I was there pretty much every step of the way for all those practices and games. It was the ride of a lifetime. So if you could sign me up for some more of that, that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, I was in the press box for his last career game as a Thunder. Whenever play went nuts in game six. That was the last year that I was on the Thunder beat with the franchise. So
well, there was a game seven. I was at that one.
I thought the game seven was in Golden State.
It was. Oh, you're saying his last game at home. I'm sorry. Yeah, I misunderstood you.
Yep. So anyway, I'm sure we have some Oklahoma State related topics to get to at some point, though. But I'm very excited about the Thunder offseason.
Well, it is the dog days of summer, and we are going to do our Reloaded podcasts this summer. We're going to probably try and do the game I mentioned last week, the 2008 OSU upset over Missouri when they were ranked second in the country. Didn't have time to dive into that. It's a little more work to go through it and watch it all. And get all my categories together. So we should be doing that here probably next week, would be my guess. But we did have some Oklahoma State topics to discuss. But first, let's hear from Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop Cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at ChrisUniversitySpirit.com. Again, Colby, I'm rocking the OSU baseball hat, all black. Every time I wear it, I get a compliment or two. So if you need a new ball cap, Chris is the place to go, and we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast as always. And don't look now, Colby, but you know, we got some stuff to get into with the EA Sports video game. But what's much more important issues for Oklahoma State football is, don't look now, but Mike Gundy's building perhaps the best recruiting class of his tenure he's ever had, which again, that's a low bar. He doesn't exactly recruit consistently in the top 25 or really much at all. But right now they're ranked nationally 25th in the country, which would match, I believe, the 2022, be slightly below the 2022 average rating, but would rank ahead of that class-wise. According to the article that Marshall Scott put out, since 2010, they have had no classes ranked in the top 25, which, Colby, is flat-out remarkable given the top 10 status Oklahoma State has on the field in wins. But they've been really trending here lately. Mike Gundy, it seems, program-wide, from offense, defense, you name it, any position, they've really revamped their recruiting because they're killing it right now.
Yeah, I would encourage all of our listeners to go to pistolsfiringblog.com and look at this story that Marshall posted. Could this be Mike Gundy's best recruiting class yet? There's a good table in here breaking down the recruiting rankings of all of Oklahoma State's classes since 2010. And you can really see, I mean, there's a clear delineation, like 2010 through 2014 inclusive. That's five classes right there. And the national ranking, those five classes, I mean, the variance was only from 25 to 31. All five classes were between 25 and 31 in the country. And then you dip down to 40 in 2015. And then all of a sudden, you're mostly in the 30s and 40s. You had one class in 2022 sneak up to 29th, 55th nationally in 2023, 56th nationally in 2024. And now Oklahoma State's 25th nationally. And I just wonder, Carson, whenever you look at the past two seasons, the past two classes, and now you're looking at this class, much higher average rating, much higher national ranking. I just wonder how much of that has to do with Mike Gundy initially maybe not being totally on board with NIL and kind of being maybe just a hair late to the party in terms of recruiting and the new game and playing the new game. And the same could be said for boosters and the administration or whoever. But when you go from 55 to 56 to 25 in recruiting ranking, and we've seen some of the things that have been done over the past year with Pokes with a Purpose, all of your offensive linemen coming back, you get Ollie back, you get Owens back and Presley back and Bowman and all these guys, Kendall Daniels, Nicholas Martin, all these guys who come back and you know that they're getting NIL money. I just have to think that part of the uptick is due to a philosophical shift from the head coach, from the athletic director, from the boosters, from the fan base as a whole. You know, they throw the QR code up on the screen at the games, and you've got 58,000 people in there who can all scan that code, and everybody can donate $20, $50, $100, and that just adds up over time. So, yeah, I think that shift for Oklahoma State, where they're now clearly investing in NIL, I think we're seeing that. They go out and get the four-star linebacker last week. They've got another JUCO commit coming in. And that average rating of nearly 87.5 now, that is very strong for Oklahoma State. So a lot of reasons to be bullish about what Oklahoma State's doing on the recruiting trail, which is not normally the story we're telling this part of the season.
No, and I think it's a reflection of the staff, you know, that Mike's hired. I mean, I think certain coaching staffs are different, right? I think – you can't just give loan credit to Mike Gundy. You can't give loan credit to Casey Dunn, who has deserved a lot of credit in the past for all the individual receivers he's gotten. But I think it's just a complete holistic approach that has changed. That's the only way you get these level of results. I think you've made it a distinct priority. Perhaps, Colby, as I'm sitting here talking about this, I wonder with Chad Weiberg in charge, how much he's made that clear to Mike, especially with, you know, all the talk that's gone on since, you know, they had that mass exodus in the portal a couple of years ago. I mean, just look at the numbers. They went in 2022, they were ranked 29th nationally. Then they go 55th, 56th, and they're currently ranked 25th. I think just like any other profession, your boss comes in and says, this ain't good enough. You need to fix it. Here's the resources I'm going to give you to do so. I don't know. It's just my speculation, but that's something that came to my mind as we were talking about it.
Yeah, and that very well could be the case. Obviously, there's no way to know what those conversations are like behind closed doors, but we've seen in the past Mike Gundy take lower-rated recruiting classes and achieve high levels of success, right? But we also look at some of the bigger names that have come through Oklahoma State. Tylan Wallace was a big-time four-star commit. Spencer Sanders was a big-time four-star commit. Ollie Gordon was a big-time commit. Kendall Daniels was a big-time commit. I mean, some of your best players have been some of your best recruits coming in, and the idea that Oklahoma State could start surrounding some more of those high three and low four-star guys with even more high three and low four-star guys, I mean, if you're running a bunch of high three and low fours out there instead of a bunch of high twos and low threes out there, I think it's reasonable to expect that Oklahoma State could continue to be one of the big dogs in the Big 12 for the foreseeable future. I don't think there's any indication that Mike Gundy is going anywhere anytime soon, nor would the Oklahoma State fan base want him to. So I think that if what we're seeing this offseason and this summer can continue and they can piece recruiting classes like this together for a few years in addition to what they've been able to accomplish in the portal, yeah, I think it's reasonable for Oklahoma State fans to expect, especially now with OU and Texas out of the conference, that we could be entering – I mean, obviously, we're 20 years into the Mike Gundy era, which is the best era in the history of Oklahoma State football, but I think we could be entering even another era where Oklahoma State goes on a 5, 6, 7, 8-year run where year in, year out, they are contenders to win the conference, and they maybe win 2, 3, 4, 5 of those titles.
Yeah, I certainly hope this trend continues. That's for sure, because it's something I've talked about on this podcast for really since this podcast began, you know, 5, 6 – God, when did we start this? This was 20. Oh my God, we're coming up on 10 years, Colby. 2015, I believe, was the first year. It was the Mason Rudolph tiny hands game in Austin when he kept fumbling with sweat and everything. That's when Kyle Porter texted me to ask if I wanted to do a podcast. So we're coming up on 10 years, man.
That's great. Crazy. I didn't realize that. I'm trying to think when I joined you. It would have been back in.
I think I asked you during like COVID, maybe.
Might have been 2020, is what I'm thinking.
I think I was stuck at home and gave you a call.
I seem to remember us talking about empty stadiums for COVID. So I would have had to have been on before that. But it was definitely after I left the franchise, which was in the fall of 19. So, yeah, I think 2020. So almost 5 years for me and almost 10 years for the pod. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy how quickly time flies. Colby, people are up in arms about the NCAA video game that's coming out from EA Sports. We saw Ollie Gordon got a ton of pub. He was in the trailer. But they have released their top 25 toughest places to play on the video game, and noticeably absent was Oklahoma State. They had Oklahoma at 8. They've been that to me, that environment's not nearly what it used to be in the heyday of Bob Stoops. Kyle Field at A&M, number 1, was a little surprising. Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, and then Georgia round out kind of the top 5. But people at Oklahoma State are up in arms about this, Colby, and I think EA Sports got it completely wrong because clearly they've never been to Boone Pickens Stadium. The fans are the closest you'll find of any stadium in the country. I would defy anyone to state otherwise. The fans are so close, they practically hover over the field. You couple that with the fact that OSU has lost 3 games at home over the past 4 years. Clearly, EA Sports just got this one wrong.
Yeah, and it kind of seemed like they're guessing a little bit. I don't know what their criteria was. They obviously got this wrong. I mean, let's just look right here at number 25, Mississippi State, 20-14 over the last 5 years at home. That's a 58% winning percentage. Oklahoma State's at almost 85%. Boise State is at 24, Arkansas at 23. Arkansas is a hard place to play. Did they just look at who has the biggest stadiums and then they chucked Boise State in because of the blue turf? I don't know. Michigan State at 22. Arkansas is one game above 500 the last 5 years at home. Michigan State's 18-12, 60% the last 5 years at home. And that's just the teams lower down the list. I mean, they've got South Carolina at 15. Carson, what don't I know about South Carolina? Is that a hard place to play? Because they've only won 57% of their games at home over the last 5 years too. I don't totally understand what at all went into this list.
Yeah, like to me, like they just sit there and go, oh, well, I know about Mississippi State. They got those cowbells, right? That's got to be tough to play. I don't know how much research they put in, which is disappointing, but I think it kind of goes back to, you know, I used to play this game a ton when I was in college, and they would get stuff wrong all the time. They would even get like certain players wrong. They'd get them switched around, and there's almost so much information that goes involved in this that they're just naturally going to get some stuff wrong. And clearly that was an omission because Andy Staples from On Three Sports, used to write for Sports Illustrated for a long time, covering college football. He did his own rankings, and he ranked Oklahoma State 10th. That just shows you the level of oversight this was from EA Sports. He ranked them in the top 10, and they weren't even ranked by EA Sports. He had Oklahoma like 16th, and then EA Sports had them 8th. I think that's way, way more accurate. So if you want a more accurate rating, I'll check out Andy Staples. But I wanted to kind of hammer home the point of how good Oklahoma State's been at home and how terrible this ranking is. Hunter Lovell on Twitter put out some numbers. Oklahoma State, their home record since 2014 is 50-15. That's 76% winning percentage. That's 21st best in the country. As home underdogs, Colby, they're 10-5. That's good for fifth in the country. Versus top 25, they're 7-3, which is 70%. Versus top 10, they're 6-4, with three losses coming to OU and that Baylor loss in 2015. So since 2020, OSU is 23-3, 6-0 versus the top 25, 5-0 as underdogs, ranked first. So clearly, Colby, and these are some teams, like we all remember that 2021 team was lights out. Last year, they kind of got hot there at the end of the year. These were not vintage Oklahoma State teams over the last 3-4 years, and they're still winning a vast, vast, vast majority of their home games. That just shows you, to me, that illustrates the home field advantage that Boone Pickens has.
You don't happen to have Andy Staples' list in front of you right now, do you?
I could pull it up.
Okay, I'll filibuster for a second while you pull that up, because I've got a couple of questions about where some teams fell in there. But I think I would be closer to his rankings. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Oklahoma State and Boone Pickens Stadium is the toughest place to play in the country, because there are stadiums that just pack an ungodly amount of people into their stadiums and also have the intensity and the fire and those things. Like in Norman, Oklahoma, they put a bunch of people in the stadium, but I don't know that their fans quite go as hard as like what you're going to see at Alabama and LSU. I would certainly have those up at the top. Texas A&M is a tough one for me because they do put a ton of people in there and they do go absolutely nuts. But Texas A&M just has not been an elite program in so long, or ever, really. I mean, Manziel won the
Forever.
I'm just trying to think about Texas A&M and like their high level that they've reached. And like, yes, Kyle Field is an intimidating place, but I mean, 78 win percentage there over the past 5 seasons. Penn State, I would have up there. They pack a ton of people in. Ohio State, I would have up there. I thought Michigan was probably a little bit too low on this list. They had Michigan at 16. I'd probably have them higher. Yeah, I mean, even like Florida, I would probably have higher. They put a ton of people in there. They go crazy. They're 24-6 the last 5 years at home, and Florida has not been very good over that stretch. So, yeah, there's some other teams. Oregon, I would certainly have up there. Oregon's a really tough place to play. Had them at 11th on this list. So, but yeah, once you get down to, I think, probably like, I don't know, Florida State, Clemson.
I have the list from Staples. Auburn.
Okay, where's Wisconsin at on his list?
It's not in their top 10. Let me get a column. It's ranked 15th.
Okay, because EA Sports has Wisconsin at 7th, and that just stood out to me as a total outlier in the top 10. Like, how is Wisconsin 7th? So I was thinking maybe there's something at Camp Randall I'm not aware of if Staples also has them up high. But, yeah, I think 15th would be more appropriate because that was one I was really surprised to see inside the top 10 on EA's.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I mean, to me, like, Wisconsin's a great environment, I think more so on campus than the actual stadium. But to me, this top 10 is way more accurate. He's got LSU 1, Alabama 2, the Swamp 3, Penn State 4, which, look, I'm all for how terrible Penn State's offense is, but that is 100,000 people going bonkers. Auburn 5. Okay, Tennessee 6. I've been there. Absolutely true. Kyle Field, I've been there, deserves a top 10 rating. Oregon 8, FSU 9, Oklahoma State 10. That's kind of his top 10. I can go further if you want.
No, that's pretty good. The only one I would probably go out on a limb and make a case for Oregon to be a few spots higher. I just not too many teams go to Oregon and win. Maybe that was a product of the conference they were in or scheduling. We'll see what that's like in the Big Ten now. But even for some of those Big Ten schools, you got to travel way out west. And yeah, I don't know. I think Oregon's a tough place to play.
Yeah, he has Texas ranked 21st. I mean, that's the most sleepy environment for a big stadium you'll ever find. I wouldn't have them anywhere near the top 25. But so anyway, I thought Andy Staples got it right.
Yeah, even in the rankings of best stadiums here, Texas benefits from the HL metric.
Yep, that's true. That's the only reason they're on the list. And they didn't have OSU in the top 25 offenses either, Colby. So just it seems as if EA Sports has a little bit of a blind spot, much like the rest of the country does, frankly, for OSU football. They ranked OSU's defense in the top 25. I believe they were like 24th or 23rd, somewhere in there. But they didn't rank an offense that brings everyone back, including the Doak Walker Award winner in Ollie Gordon.
Yeah, again, I'd love to know what their criteria is. It doesn't make any sense at all. The HL metric, by the way, if we have any new listeners, that's helmet logo, which Texas benefits from regularly. But yeah, it kind of seems like EA's guessing. I do want to ask, Carson, are you, you know, we're both grown now. We've got families, kids, stuff, jobs. We've got things going on. Are you going to get this game? Are you going to play this game? Or are you just going to chalk it up to, you know, I'm not at a point in my life where I can really turn on the system and sit down for a couple of hours?
Yeah, I had my jersey retirement. You know how like MMA fighters, they'll leave the gloves in the octagon, like when they're done. That's like their symbolism of retirement. I left my controller in the dumpster. I am no longer a video gamer. I got to the point, Colby, this was, gosh, 10, 15 years ago. I got to the point where I would play a video game for a couple hours. Then I had this like overwhelming like guilt. Like I could have been doing something on my house. I could have been doing something very productive. Did I just waste 2 hours when I could have been getting something accomplished? It was fun, but what do I have to show for it? I couldn't overcome that feeling.
Yeah, I was a huge video gamer growing up, especially like middle school, high school, Call of Duty, all that good stuff. And I still played some video games into my early 20s, but it's been a long time since I've played a video game. I don't know, 4 or 5 years probably since I played a video game. And actually, just within the last month, my Xbox One that I've had pretty much since they came out fried and went out on us. And we would use it to watch TV in the living room. I would never play anything. So we just went and got a Roku stick. We did not get a new gaming system. So I wouldn't have anything to play it on anyway. And I don't have the time or the desire to fire it up. But I am curious. I'll watch like the clips that people post. And I'm curious to get people's reviews on it because I know that game meant a lot to a lot of people. And a lot of people are going to want to play the new version this time around. So I hope that they get it right once you're actually in the game as far as the gameplay goes.
Yeah, I mean, in college, my nickname in the fraternity house was Game Genie because I was awesome at any video. I had a weird, like, it was a weird skill, Colby. If you gave me like 10 minutes with a game, I would figure it out. I'd figure out like how to beat it or how to beat you at it. That goes with like hockey to, you know, any kind of game there is. And I actually was playing online NCAA football back then. Back then you had to have like the Ethernet port into your PlayStation.
Oh yeah.
And I was using that and I was like ranked in like the top, I think I was ranked in like the top 100 at some point in all of college football players. So I was all in, but that, again, that was much younger days and I grew up and loved video games, but the moment has come and passed me by. I have more pressing issues at home and in my personal life now than I used to, I guess.
So you mentioned the Ethernet cable having to go into the console, and it reminds me at the house I grew up in Chickasha, one of my bedroom walls was a connecting wall with my mom's office. My mom did a lot of work from home, and so like the router or whatever it was back there then was in there. So if she was working, I couldn't be playing video games. And if I was playing video games, she couldn't be working. So what I did under my desk and under her desk, cut a hole in the drywall so that we could easily move the Ethernet cord back and forth through the hole in the wall so that I could play video games, she could get her work done. Yeah, and you were the game genie. I was a Call of Duty guy. I won't tell everybody my full Call of Duty resume at the risk of people thinking I'm even more of a nerd than they probably already do. But that used to be my thing about 15 years ago.
Oh, sorry, I was getting a phone call there. Where do we want to go next?
Why don't we go to basketball? I mean, a little bit of size coming in from West Virginia. It's Carson, it's just such slim pickings right now. I had somebody yesterday, where was I at, asked me about the Oklahoma State basketball team. Oh, I was out at Lincoln Park. Shout out to Sam, the starter out at Lincoln Park, was asking me about Oklahoma State basketball and the roster that they're putting together and stuff. And I kind of told him the same thing. It's like, man, there's just not a lot out there right now, and you're trying to piece a roster together and make it all work in year one. Steve Lutz is being dealt a tough hand just in terms of what is available to build a roster. Now, that doesn't mean that the guys that he's bringing in won't be productive, won't fit in his system, that it won't all work, that they won't have a good year one. But this is a guy who averaged 4 points a game last year for West Virginia. He did have a career high 20 in a win against Kansas. He's 6'8", 235 pounds. So he brings a little bit of size, much needed size for Oklahoma State. But again, if anybody's expecting to log on and see that Oklahoma State got a transfer for basketball who's a two guard that averages 18 points a game and shoots 45% from three, I just don't think that guy's out there. I think it's going to be very much a mix and matched roster for year one under Lutz, and he's just going to have to make the best out of what he has and then really try to build his system and bring all of his guys in the regular time span after that. Obviously he got in a little bit late, and there's only so many players to go around.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, warm bodies filling the roster is about where we're at. Patrick Sumnick from West Virginia, 6'8", 235, 4 points a game, 2.6 rebounds a game and 14 minutes per game. So nothing to write home about. It's going to be fascinating to me though, Colby, just what this team looks like under Lutz. He's got a lot of work needing to be done to get these players to all play together and certainly make them all fit together. But I think I was kind of waiting, Colby, on, I was kind of waiting for the, you know how like USC with Lincoln Riley, they take credit for stuff he did at OU all the time on social media. Do you know what I'm referencing?
I actually don't. I have not followed.
Oh, they just they, like there's been tweets about like Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield from like USC.
Oh, no.
Because like Lincoln Riley's the coach, or, you know, like OU did the thing with Venables winning three national championships, which, you know, two of which were at Clemson and one was when he was the assistant DC in 2000 at OU, not as the head coach, taking credit for those, you know, like teams, schools are doing that more and more. I was kind of expecting an OSU basketball tweet claiming responsibility for Zach Edey going ninth overall in the NBA draft last night. Cause you know, the famous story is Lutz is the one who convinced Matt Painter to recruit Zach Edey, who had really no offers at all at the time. I was kind of waiting on that. I was very happy that I didn't see that.
Yeah. I'm glad that didn't come out. Yeah. I have not seen too much of that stuff. I don't spend very much time on social media, but I'm glad you shared that with me because that's hilarious that USC would send stuff out about Kyler and Baker. That's just, honestly, that's very cringe to be doing stuff like that.
Well, they did tweet some stuff. Let's see here. Just some stories about from Jeff Borzello about Painter and Lutz recruiting him. Looks like Lutz tweeted out Zach Edey's freshman student ID. Said, "Congrats, big fellow. Come a long way since this day. Lots of hard work and dedication. Go be great." That's just wishing a guy well that you had a relationship with. That wasn't Oklahoma State basketball produces Zach Edey, number 9 overall, you know?
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Carson, I'm excited for the Missouri game and the Reloaded. I don't know that there's too much else on the slate today.
Yeah. I mean, what'd you make of the Texas A&M baseball coach going to Texas? Yeah. This would be like Gundy going to OU in football. I mean, those are two programs that care a lot about baseball.
Yeah, they do. And the way he did it, It was tough.
Durant-like?
To sit up there after they lose on Monday night in the national championship game and say that I took the job at Texas A&M so that I would never have to take another job, and then be announced the next morning as the coach at Texas, and his defense in his introductory press conference with Texas, and he at least addressed it and said that he just wanted the attention to be on the kids and he didn't want his future to be the focus in that moment. There are so many other things. There are an infinite number of words in the English language that you can piece together in an infinite number of orders that does not make you say that you took the job at A&M to never have to take another job again. I think that's even worse than what Lincoln Riley did, where he said, I will not be the head coach at LSU, when directly asked if he would be the head coach at LSU, because Schlossnagel's telling him, I took this job because I want to be here forever. I mean, he's just flat out said it, and then goes to the rival the following morning. I thought that was brutal. And I did not find his explanation to be sufficient in terms of that strong of a statement Monday night after the game.
Yeah, and like, I'm so tired of like coaches like ridiculing the media for doing their job, and it turns out to be a very valid question, even if he didn't take the job. Clearly there was some smoke there. Clearly this was negotiated weeks prior. Like, clearly the guy was just doing his job. And it's a very easy question to answer. Say, hey, I'm the head coach of Texas A&M. Like, you don't have to do that. That goes all over me. Just the self-importance of coaches and athletes thinking that the media is just there to bug them, when really they're doing their job and they provide a valuable outlet to the people who care about you most, the fans. They just, that relationship has deteriorated a long time ago. And it's frankly embarrassing the way he handled it. It was just a complete joke, which makes him perfect for the University of Texas, in my opinion, and basically both in A&M as well. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just, again, what's wrong with, I understand why you're asking that question, and I appreciate that you have a job to do. Tonight's not really about me. It's about that special group of guys in there who accomplished something. Yeah. Season and came up just short. So I just want to keep the focus on my team because those guys put a lot into this season to get here. Boom. Yeah,
exactly.
You go to Texas the next day, you're still a traitor, but you don't have egg all over your face for saying you were never going to take another job 12 hours ago.
Yeah, that's, I think you could have led a PR class there. That was good stuff. All right, let's get to the Toast of the Week, brought to you by Yuengling, America's oldest brewery. Which direction are you going in this week, Colby? Do you have one prepared?
I do, yes, and it's going to be something else that took place Monday night. Carson, as you know, and some of the listeners know, my wife and I have really taken to hockey over the past couple of years. The more I watch it, the more I get into it. It's an awesome sport. It's crazy fast-paced. I actually didn't even, and I like college baseball, but I did not even turn the Tennessee-Texas A&M game on the side screen Monday night because I didn't want to be looking over at the baseball and get distracted from something that was happening with the puck. So I only had one of the three TVs on Monday night. It was on the Stanley Cup Final. And the Toast of the Week goes to the Florida Panthers because after losing three straight, and getting outscored 18-5 in those games, just getting beaten by like a drum by the best player in the world and what was starting to look like the best team in the world, they come home with no momentum, and the only thing on the line is being a laughingstock for all of eternity in that sport. And somehow they find a way to win that game and become Stanley Cup champions. It was an awesome series from 3-0 to 3-3, and then Florida taking it at home in game seven. I've really gotten into the hockey, and the Florida Panthers deserve a Yuengling Toast of the Week. Many Yuenglings, it seems like, have been drank out of that cup, which was also fully submerged in the Atlantic Ocean yesterday. So they are living their best lives down in Florida. The southernmost state in the U.S. just owning hockey over the last little more than a half decade, I think. The Lightning won 3 out of 5, and now the Panthers have won. So the southernmost state in the U.S. is pretty much dominating hockey for an extended period of time now.
I'm going to be honest with you. Until the playoffs kind of got midway through, I didn't realize the Florida Panthers were still a franchise in hockey. Like, have you heard of the Florida Panthers over the last 10 years?
I mean, yes, but even before being a big hockey fan, I kind of knew what was going on in that sport because we have some friends that live just outside Denver that are big hockey fans and have been pretty much as long as I've known them my entire life. So, so yes, I was familiar, but they've been pretty much a laughingstock. They came into the league in 93, made the finals in 96, lost to the Avs, and then they were a laughingstock for like 20 plus years. Then they win the President's Cup trophy 3 years ago. They get blown out in the first round. They decide, you know what? We're blowing up the roster after having the best record in the league in the regular season. They send Huberdeau to Calgary. They get Tkachuk back, two Stanley Cup appearances in a row, and they finally got the trophy. So they have just pushed every right button down there.
I remember Keith Tkachuk. That's when I used to follow hockey, back when he played for the Phoenix Coyotes. That's his son. So we're getting old.
Yeah, Keith is the dad to Matthew and Brady, who are both in the NHL now. Matthew Tkachuk was on the Florida Panthers. Brady plays for the Ottawa Senators. But, yeah, Keith was shown whatever the over-under was on how many times they were going to show Keith on the broadcast and how many times they were going to say that he isn't in the Hall of Fame but should be, the over smashed within, like, 7 minutes of puck.
Wait, he's not in the Hall of Fame?
He is not in the Hall of Fame, and he should be, as was mentioned on the broadcast, no less than 25 times Monday night.
Yeah, that's weird. I think the only reason I knew the Panthers still existed was Brooks Koepka being a fan and them showing video of him clapping.
Yeah, Brooks he's a diehard Panthers guy.
But they apparently still throw the fake rats on the ice. They did that back in like 94 when I actually knew the Panthers were in existence. Back when they had, Keith Van Beesbrouck?
Yeah,
this is in the depths of my brain that I'm pulling out from somewhere I didn't know. Oh, John Van Beesbrouck. He was the goalie. He played for, he played for the Rangers. Yep, Florida Panthers. They made a run to the Stanley Cup Finals during the like 96-97 season, something like that. That was like prime sports watching for me. I loved watching hockey back then, but John Van Beesbrouck is the last time I followed the Panthers.
Yep. That was 95-96, I think, whenever they went down to the Avs. So,
yeah.
And it's cool. I mean, I like individual greatness in sports. So it would have been cool to see Connor McDavid have kind of his crowning achievement and come back from a 3-0 deficit to win it. But it's also cool to see a franchise get its first ever championship. As a Texas Rangers fan who saw the first one last year, and as a Thunder fan who plans to celebrate the first, championship in franchise history sometime in the next 2 to 3 years, that hits close to home for me.
I don't have as good of a toast as that, other than I want to give a toast to Mike Gundy again. Like, this has become a theme on this podcast here the last month or two. To me, it just screams of a holistic approach to recruiting that he frankly hasn't subscribed to his entire coaching tenure. And it's very refreshing. And again, this right here is all I've ever asked for in terms of recruiting. Just recruit at the top 25 level or near 25th to me. Hey, that's perfect. They're still going to get those 4-star skill players they've always gotten. They're still going to get, 2- and 3-star guys that end up becoming all Big 12 type players. But it's just the numbers and the statistics tell you that recruiting absolutely matters. And when you sit back and look on Mike Gundy's tenure and you see a lack of Big 12 championships or further, I think the reason why they tend to fall short in some of those games is they don't have quite the same talent level. Look at the Texas Big 12 championship game this past season. Look at that time they played that cheating Ole Miss team that had a bunch of 4- and 5-stars on it. It was a schoolyard whooping. They didn't have the dudes to hang at that level. They've got the dudes to hang at the Big 12 level. I just think that this new recruiting philosophy to me will help them get, once they get to those type of games against that type of talent level, they'll be able to win and survive. So that to me is a huge, huge deal for OSU football.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's like I said earlier, you fill the pond with bigger fish and you're liable to catch a little better something out of that pond. So I'm very bullish about the future of Oklahoma State football. It really is wild, Carson. The turnaround in a year's time, it's everything has shifted. It was all bad. The future was bleak. What's going to happen with Mike Gundy? I mean, that was a year ago, Carson. That's what we were talking about a year ago. And then that conversation was followed by the worst September maybe in the history of Mike Gundy's tenure. And now it is truly almost all sunshine and rainbows. It's been the most remarkable one-year turnaround.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Anything else we needed to discuss? One last note. Oklahoma State is officially, and I may be bearing the lead here, Colby. I probably should have led with this. That's on me. Winners of 9 of the last 11 Bedlam series, Oklahoma State are the Bedlam champs once again by their largest margin in history. They went 21-9 in Bedlam across every sport the two universities offer. So congratulations to Oklahoma State. Toast to Yingling to Oklahoma State, taking home Bedlam 21-9, largest margin in school history.
That is fantastic. Enjoy the SEC. Enjoy the SEC. We had some fun as we sent the Oklahoma Sooners out the door in conference play. Carson, great stuff as always. Everyone have a great weekend. We're back next time with Pistols Firing Reloaded as we break down Oklahoma State and Missouri 2008. Mike Gundy drawing up plays on the equipment box. Great stuff. Appreciate everyone listening as always. Go Pokes!